Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, May 18th, 2023. And I'd like to say hello to David. David.
Dare we be so formal?
Mr. David.
Hello. Dave is fine. Other words are fine as well. But hey, happy No Dirty Dishes Day, by the way. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
It's a day that many of us, myself especially, fail on day after day after day. In fact, as I look over my shoulder from my dining room table as we speak, I see that stack from last night's dinner and this morning's breakfast waiting for my attention. So, as I always do on Tuesdays and Thursdays, as soon as we sign off at today's program, I'm heading over to the sink and clean that mess up before my better half gets home from work.
And she'll be very upset that you waited all day long. I'm going to tell her.
That's all I'll say about that.
I'm going to tell her.
You stay out of this.
I'm going to squeal on you.
regrets.
Oh, I know.
Why did I open my mouth?
And tell the whole world. You know, this program is worldwide, so you just told the world.
Thank you very much.
Well, let's tell the world about gold today. Gold had another pullback, big one, $25, but off the low, $1,958. Silver was down 25 cents at 23.59. Platinum was down 19 at 1,062. Palladium was down $20, 1,494. So all the precious metals were hit. Pretty good, and that directs me to the USDX showing some strength, 0.68 at 103.53. Crude oil was down 85 cents at 71.98. The paper markets today. The Dow was up 115 points, 33,535. S&P was up 39, 4,198. The NASDAQ was up 188, 12,688. I'm sure Europe is all green. Absolutely. Asia was all green. Absolutely. Hey, I guess it's all because, yeah, we're getting closer to a signing of the, you know, raising the debt ceiling. Oh, boy, we're not going to default. 10-year yield up 0.074, 3.65. And natural gas, yeah, it was up 2.61 after being up 10%. So 2.61 up 10.5%. So a great day there. And I don't think there was anything that was earth-shattering today. I think everybody knows that we have a G7 meeting going on. It starts tomorrow in Japan. You've got the seven major industrial countries, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, United Kingdom, and the U.S. And they're all going to make your plans for the future of global relations and helping you with the world economy. They're going to address, they might address geopolitical tensions, central banks' fights against rising inflation, the debt ceiling. Why don't we just leave the U.S. debt ceiling back here in the States where it belongs? Why does it have to be discussed and have the influence of all these other nations in there? What's the point? Bring it back. Shouldn't even be discussed at a G7 meeting. That's our problem. Also under the spotlight are other countries invited, Australia, Brazil, India, Indonesia, South Korea, Vietnam. It's interesting to see. Well, of course, they're bringing, you got BRICS, you got Brazil, the BRIC nations, you got Brazil there, you got India there. So I guess they're concerned about China's influence in some of these countries and Asian countries where they're trying to, now we're trying to buddy up to. Let's see. I guess that's, what do you have to say about it, Dave?
Interesting that it's in Hiroshima, Japan, where the nuclear age officially unfolded 80 years ago. Comes on the heels of a meeting that some G7 finance leaders and bankers, central bankers, held last week, another city there, where they pledged to combat rising costs and ensure, you know, expectations on future prices remain well anchored, to use the words of their statement. Not sure how they can control that. The Brookings Institute's Mariah Solis said this about the summit and the growing divide between the U.S. and China. These are superpowers on the nuclear issue, and therefore I think that Hiroshima encapsulates a very poignant reminder of the need to address these issues to avoid a similar outcome. Now, interestingly, everyone's hyped about Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, slated to join the meeting via Zoom on Sunday, I believe. Additional sanctions against
Russia. I guess he needs more money.
Well,
more money, more money, more money for Zelensky. Yes. And who knows? There's no accountability for any of that money going over there. So who knows where it goes?
More weapons for sure. Yeah. I know that there's still a lot of talk about getting the U.S.'s F-16 fighter jets, although Biden is not changed his mind on that, as far as we know. So we'll see where this leads. You know, they, besides, and even if they try and close some loopholes on some of these Russian sanctions, I think most of it, like it usually is going to be another week of window dressing. Mm-hmm. We'll see if Biden stays for the whole week or if he'll need to get back to ink a deal on the debt ceiling.
Well, you know, it's funny. Every time I see or hear about Hiroshima, I remember seeing a comparison between that city today and to a couple of our cities, and the one that they posted that I saw the comparison to was Detroit. You can probably put San Francisco up there now. You can probably put Detroit. You probably put Chicago. How decayed our cities have become, and compared to that city. And it's I don't know, it's kind of an eye-opener on the path that we took and how we built the world up, and we failed to keep what we needed here so we could stay on top. And so that's what that always reminds me of. And now they're over there, and it's, you know, I'm sure they're over there patting everybody's on their back. Anyway, I digress into something different. Global debt grows to $305 trillion. The first quarter to a near record high. Of the 305, $8.3 trillion, that's what it grew in the first quarter. The Institute of International Finance says the combination of such high debt levels and rising interest rates has driven up the cost of servicing that debt, triggering concerns about leverage in the financial system. Central banks, we know, have been hiking rates, interest rates, for a little over a year. Federal Reserve hiked its Fed funds rate earlier again this month to a target range of 5 to 5.25%. Now, this goes all the way back. This is the highest since August of 2007. The report also said with financial conditions at their most restricted levels since 2008 and 2009, a credit crunch would prompt higher default rates and result in more zombie firms. Already approaching an estimated 14% of U.S. listed firms. That's a pretty big number there, Dave. 14%.
Yeah, it is.
A sharp increase in global debt marked a second consecutive quarterly increase following two quarters of steep declines during last year's run of aggressive monetary policy tightening.
Yeah, if we think the 14% is high, just wait. If we get to it later in the program, we have a little bit about growing bankruptcies and how that is going to be even a much larger problem in the coming months. But the IIF added that global debt's now $45 trillion higher than its pre-pandemic level, presumably the end of 2019. And it's expected to continue to grow. Projected that national defense spending is expected to increase over the medium term because of heightened geopolitical tensions around the world. That could potentially affect the credit profile of both governments and corporate borrowers. Total debt in emerging markets hit a new record high of more than $100 trillion. That's about 250% of GDP of that group, up from $75 trillion right before the pandemic. China, joke that they're still in the emerging markets. Mexico, Brazil, India, and Turkey are the largest contributors to that. Of course, in the developed markets, we have Japan, France, the UK, and, of course, the U.S., being the sharpest increases. Debt.
And it's not going to go away. It's only going to increase because that's the world we live in. The world revolves on debt. It is the drug of choice. And, you know, with debt, again, everybody is talking about the debt ceiling talks and how they're going to continue. And everyone is assuring that there's not going to be any default on the debt. White House says there's no alternative. So they're going to, you know, whatever's going to have to be done is going to be done. And I just it's the same program, the same play. But everybody does become accustomed to this play. They've seen it. It's been replayed, rebroadcast, and then one of these days there will be a new chapter, a new act, Dave, to where they will actually default.
I found it interesting. Again, this is not going to go anywhere, but a bipartisan bill was introduced today by Representatives Abigail Spanberger and of Virginia, I believe, and Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania, that would prohibit members of Congress, House and Senate, from getting paid if the U.S. were to enter a debt default or if the government shuts down again. The No Pay for Congress During Default or Shutdown Act, the NPCDDSA, would withhold lawmakers' pay for the duration of a debt limit breach or lapse in federal funding. Of course, an attempt to motivate legislators to prevent either situation from happening, whether or not they tie their hands like that. Certainly, we can't be, but we can be 99% sure, I believe, that this will not see the light of a vote in either house.
Of course not.
But hey, good for Spanberger and Fitzpatrick.
But you know what? The thing that all bothers me most, they sit around coming up with all of these bills, knowing that they would never get to the light of day. I mean, it's just not this one. I mean, how many of them are written? It'd be kind of interesting to see how many are actually written, knowing it's not going to get done. So do they do it for the reelection campaign so they can say, we tried to get this done? And is that what they're trying to create? Because I just could never figure that out. I mean, that's the only logical reasoning behind it.
Well, I mean, let's be fair. I mean, some of them are introduced on some level of sincerity that, the member or members who are sponsoring a bill are at least care about an issue, if not actual passionate about it. So there is that. There is that aspect to it, I believe. But like you suggest, too, the ones that are dead on arrival like this are, again, part of the new age of performance legislation. It's for a soundbite, and it's for, a photograph and some news in a future reelection ad.
Yeah. But I mean, they can. Yeah, I agree with you, Dave. I'm sure there's some sincerity there when they're creating this, but with the sincerity of knowing it's still going to be dead on arrival. I mean, you can be sincere about it, but still knowing it's going to be dead on arrival.
I think about all the work. And I worked with these folks 30 some years ago. So
that's a long time. Things changed a lot in 40 years.
What I'm saying is that the work that goes into, say, producing the president's proposed budget every year is a ton of time and a ton of work by hundreds of people in the executive branch. And then, of course, when it hits the streets, you got the Congressional Budget Office, you got these other nonprofits, you got every member of the House and Senate staff, appropriation and budget committees. It's got to be billions of dollars a year in time that's spent on this legislation, which we know, I mean, that's the most important legislation. Or among the most important that the Congress should be dealing with each and every year. And again, when's the last time a president's proposed budget got any serious attention? In fact, when was the last time Congress passed all of its appropriation bills in something other than, this omnibus continuing resolution it's turned into a joke.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of jokes coming out of DC of late. Hey, and I hear the music, so we will be returning here in just a few short minutes. Please stay tuned. Please stay with us.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you, never gonna give you up.
And welcome back. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, and sign up for our weekly newsletter and blog. And I have to do this, Dave.
Uh-oh.
Before we go into this next segment, I have to talk about jobless claims. It's Jobless Claims Thursday.
I was fearful that we were going to skip
it. We were going
today.
To miss it. So I don't know what it means, because now it's telling us that the claims actually fell this week by more than 14,000 from the previous week. I'm not even sure these, you know, what they really all mean about anything, but applications for initial jobless claims for the week ending May 13th fell by 22,000 to 242 from 264 the week before. So I don't know. Now there was news of a fraudulent Massachusetts numbers. Yeah, let's blame Massachusetts number made the hand ringing over last week's jump in claims seem overblown. Economists still expect a slow uptick in layoffs in the second half of 2003. Yeah, Dave, it's like all these layoffs, it doesn't really even make a difference to these numbers. You know, and the numbers have been staggering for layoffs. It's incredible.
Yeah, well, it makes me wonder if, you know, it's how important it is to report on this every week. As we do, and you know, it, it, certainly an important trend, but, you know, over a several month period, but over, you know, week to week, I'm not sure what kind of, because, well, among other things, they're revised once or twice after the initial reading. And so that always ends up skewing it. And I mean, it's a confusing indicator in any event. But I think just as a general metric showing trends, you know, it's...
You know what we could do, Dave? Just gather them for the month. And then we can, when we do the jobs report, the first Friday,
yeah,
we could just have, you know, there was a total, just do the totals. There was
that's good. We'll have to follow up on that. You know, still 1.8 million Americans collecting some kind of unemployment benefits at the end of April. That's about 8,000 less than the week before. Analysts have pointed to this sustained increase in the four-week averages that tend to smooth out the week-to-week volatility as a sign that layoffs are speeding up, but they're reluctant to predict that a spike in layoffs is imminent. So, again, I think, Melody, what you're suggesting, I mean, first, we have the government jobs report showing how many private farm jobs are added the prior month, and that can almost subtract or add, I mean, to that, a net of all the layoffs in the same over the same period.
But then, Dave, we're going to have to find something to do on, you know, claimless Thursdays.
Oh, I have a feeling we can.
Do you think we'll be able to find something?
I think we will.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about your levity is golden. And I only have one comment after you're finished with it, because it's to me, it's an example of money doesn't matter anymore.
Well, I think. Observation. We live in, I always say, interesting times. We live in scary times as well. I mean, there certainly aren't as many monarchs in the world today as there were, say, 100, 200 years ago. But today's count isn't all that paltry either. You know, I saw that, not counting the UK, 28 countries and territories are headed by a king or queen. I mean, just about all of them king. And if you include the recently coronated King Charles of the UK, you can add another 18 countries to the count. You know, like Canada, Australia, New Zealand, several Caribbean, and some South Pacific territories, for a total of 46 monarchies around the world. Now, not to insult anyone's intelligence, but monarch is the head of a monarchy, a form of government where a state is ruled by an individual who normally rules for life or until abdication, and typically inherits the throne by birth. Monarchs can be autocrats. They call them absolute monarchies, or they can be ceremonial figureheads, like most of them are. But not all, exercising only limited or no reserve powers at all, with actual authority vested in a legislature, a parliament, or an executive cabinet. Many constitutional monarchies. Well, it turns out it's not cheap to run a modern-day monarchy either. Just ask the UK. Queen Elizabeth's II's funeral last fall, and the lying in state cost Britain's government an estimated, listen to this, £162 million. That's around $200 million, according to the UK Treasury. The state funeral for the late monarch, held September 19th, was the first in the UK since that of former Prime Minister Winston Churchill in 1965. The solemn occasion, which was attended by throngs of world leaders and dignitaries, followed 10 days of national mourning after the Queen died earlier in that month after 70 years on the throne. But thousands of people, if not millions, were drawn to Westminster Abbey to see the UK's longest-serving monarch lying in state. The costs that I mentioned were published today as part of a written statement to Parliament. John Glenn, who is Chief Secretary to the Treasury, said the government's priorities were that these events run smoothly and with the appropriate level of dignity, while at all times ensuring the safety and security of the public. Well, Elizabeth and her husband, Prince Philip, were both at St. George's Chapel in Windsor Castle. And that melody is this week's Levity is Golden.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, you mentioned that so many of them, you know, they're only ceremonial figureheads. So
yeah,
it's where they, but yet the people have to pay for their extravagant lifestyles. And I think that's what a lot of people are beginning, especially in the UK, are beginning to get tired of. And I know the Englanders, they love their kings and their queens, and, you know, and it's, I don't know why, but they do. And so it's just.
Hey, traditions can be a beautiful thing, but at what cost? You got
to
add.
And to me, when you look at that $200 million, it's like money doesn't matter to these people. I mean, they don't. Even if they would attempt, I don't even know the price tag of his coronation. So you get two back-to-back huge expenses. And do they really need all those castles in all those places? But what are you to do with a castle?
Yeah.
What do you do when it's no longer a castle?
Some friends. We've got some friends looking for a new bed and breakfast to buy.
There you go. There you go. So anyway, but yeah, then, I mean. Go ahead.
Yeah. No. I was just trying to be flippant.
Oh.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Yeah. I wonder if, you know, even 50 years from now, what we'll find in that respect. Mm-hmm. Of course, some say, well, be careful what you ask for. Because if not a monarchy, it's going to be something else. It's one thing if it's, you know, constitutional republic, you know, whatever, democracy. But could also go the other way, too. And something more autocratic. Mm-hmm. And so.
Well.
I guess the other
way
to say it.
We won't be around.
Well, that I was just leading there. It is what it is. And 50 years down the road, it'll.
Something else is what it is commercial real estate prices fell in the first quarter for the first time in over a decade. And of course, this is one of the big, this is one of the areas where I think there's a lot of concern how it's going to affect the banking industry. The less than 1% decline was led by drops in multifamily residences and office buildings. This is all data from courthouse records of transactions. Lots more price declines are coming. This is from Mark Zandi, Moody's Analytics chief economist. The danger is that will compound the difficulties confronting many banks at a time when they are fighting to retain deposits in the face of the steep rise in interest rates over the past year. Excluding farms and residential properties, banks accounted for more than 60% of the $3.6 trillion in commercial real estate loans outstanding in the fourth quarter of 2022. And these smaller institutions are particularly exposed. Now, according to the Federal Reserve's semiannual financial stability report, it also added that the magnitude of a correction in property values could be sizable. My quotation is, will be sizable, and therefore could lead to credit losses at these banks, Dave.
Well, we've got the newer Fed Vice Chair for Supervision, Michael Barr, told members of Congress the other day that supervisors at the Fed have increased their oversight of these financial institutions that have significant exposure to this sector. You know, its valuated price index has fallen for 8 straight months, and in March stood 5.2% lower than a year ago. Rise in employees working from home has driven some downtown retailers and restaurants literally out of business and forced the owners of those office buildings to reduce rents, to retain tenants, or to sell them altogether. A lot of places are being converted to other uses. One economist, Stuart Paul, said further consolidation of the banking industry may prove to be the solution that allows the banking industry at large to work out their problem loans. Now, Zandi himself forecast prices dropping another 10% if the U.S. avoids a recession. If it doesn't, he says the declines will get a lot worse.
Well, I think we all know the U.S. is not going to avoid a recession. We're probably already in one. We've never came out of the old ones that we were in. They just bailed it out. But the recessions always existed. They just... And you know, home inventory, there's a persistently low inventory of homes on the market held back home sales again in April. Even as the national median sales price posted its biggest annual drop in 11 years, existing home sales fell 3.4% in April from March to a seasonally adjusted annual rate at 4.28. Now, this is all from the National Association of Realtors that they reported today. And, you know, we used to say, Dave, that the auto industry was the, you know, the economy went with the auto industry.
Yeah.
I think the auto industry was replaced by property. So maybe even, I don't know if you could pinpoint the residential property. So as that goes, so goes the economy. Or would the economy?
I think so. We'll take a closer look at the relationship of the factors to GDP growth.
Yeah. Sales sank 23.2% compared with April last year. This is the annual drop was the steepest in markets across the western part of the country, where the sales actually plunged more than 30% from a year earlier. We also saw the national median home price slip almost 2% from April last year to $388,800. Let's see if there's anything else interesting in there. Sales are down. This is from Lawrence Young. Sales are down. Even prices are down, yet multiple offers are happening on at least one-third of the properties that have been sold above their list price. That would be good news, Dave.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the 30-year mortgage, which was in the upper sixes and I think even hit seven, the high sixes in early March certainly hurt sales in April, because there is a month or two lag effect. You've got the time when a sale agreement of sale is signed and when they close. But mortgage rates have actually moved a little lower since that March spike, and while it's hovering around 6.3%, it's still about a point and a half higher than 1 year ago. And, of course, that's forced two things. First-time home buyers staying on the sidelines. Existing homeowners who otherwise might be interested in moving up are saying, not right now.
Looks like we're on break, Dave, so we're a little over. We'll be right back. You're listening to Financial Survival. Such a fine sight to see. It's a girl, my lord, in a flatbed Ford, slowing down to take a look at me. Come on, babe. Don't say babe. I gotta know if your sweet love is gonna save me. We may lose and we may win, but we will never be here again. So open up, I'm climbing in. So take it easy.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
One more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody, taking care of other client businesses, Final Sector. You know where to get her. 1-800-375-4188. We mentioned this in the first segment, bankruptcy soaring. When Vice Media filed for bankruptcy this week, it was one of seven large Chapter 11 bankruptcies in just a two-day span that started on Sunday. And that's a lot. And more are likely on the way. Vice's bankruptcy documents tell the story in painstaking detail, in fact, of what happens when the easy money era comes to an end. Well, that end era ended just over a year ago when the Fed embarked on one of the steepest and fastest rate hiking campaigns in history. And it takes about that long for the consequences to really start kicking in. Well, one of the most visible effects is bankruptcy, more filings and bigger. The blitz that started off is a highly unusual pace of filings. As a petition, a must-read bankruptcy newsletter noted, if the pace in the second half of this month matches the first half, May will clock the highest monthly tally of large corporate bankruptcies so far this year. Large filings are defined as those with liabilities of $10 million or more. And don't forget, by the way, filings in the first quarter had already jumped to their highest point since the bout of distress at the start of the pandemic. Now, though Vice faced challenges specific to digital media, its first day declaration by its chief restructuring officer, Frank Pometti, is all about that sweet, sweet access to capital. Pometti says Vice relied on external funding, raising both debt and equity capital to fuel its rapid growth. Vice, he added, has been cash flow negative for the past several years. Now, Vice Media isn't unique. I mean, look at KKR-owned Envision Healthcare, which filed on Sunday under a nearly $8 billion mountain of debt, or Bed Bath & Beyond, which succumbed to bankruptcy last month. I mean, both were distressed even before the pandemic began, but the capital markets helped them kick the can down the road for years until they didn't anymore. Well, this isn't necessarily evidence of a widespread credit crunch that everyone's worried about. The bond market, for instance, remains open for business, especially for companies with earnings and reasonable credit metrics. But the first thing that happens when the ultra-easy access to funding dries up is that the spigot stops for the companies that maybe shouldn't be borrowing more anyway. The most vulnerable, namely those that have too much debt, they suddenly have a harder time convincing investors to keep funding their losses. S&P Global forecasts that the default rate in the U.S. will rise over 4.25% by the beginning of next year from 2.5% currently, or to 6.5% if there's a serious recession. Well, Axios's Emily Peck reports that once dismissed as a fringe theory, the idea that corporate thirst for profits drives up inflation, sometimes called greedflation, is now being taken more seriously by economists, policymakers, and the business press. Though inflation is starting to come down, it still remains well above the Fed's target of 2%, and understanding what's causing it is key to combating it now and the next time. We know what it is. I mean, the good old dollar and the money supply. We won't get into that any further today, but the idea that profits drove our current bout of inflation surfaced in the last few years among progressive economists and lawmakers, but was waved away by more mainstream types as a conspiracy theory. Well, that changed earlier this year. In January, then-Fed Vice Chair Lyle Brainard said wages weren't the main driver of inflation and pointed to a price spiral, where companies mark up prices far higher than the increases in their input costs. We saw this across many industries, particularly oil and gas. In March, Chief Economist at UBS Global Wealth, Paul Donovan, published a note on profit margin-led inflation. He described how in late 2022 and into this year, companies, particularly retailers and consumer good makers, convinced consumers that they needed to raise prices. They really didn't, at least not to the extent they did and have. Most of the time, these companies have weak pricing power, meaning they depend on repeat customers and can't just wildly increase prices because customers will abandon them. But businesses, both large and small, had a convincing story to tell. They really didn't want to raise prices. But there was this terrible war in the pandemic or labor shortages or whatever, and that's basically what's been going on, according to Donovan. With so much in flux, people were more accepting of higher costs for everything, and more convinced companies had to raise prices. In earnings conference calls last year especially, executives spoke corporate lingo about consumers accepting such price increases. In fact, a few weeks after Donovan's paper came out, European Central Bank executive board member Fabio Panetta expressed worries that inflation growth was due to increasing profits. The following month, the column in Bloomberg Opinion drew attention to increasing profit margins and urged consumers to push back. By May, the Wall Street Journal published a story on how corporate profits were keeping inflation high as well. They cited the work of Isabel Weber. She's an economist at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, who was derided for her work on the topic back in late 2021. But now suddenly everyone wants to know how to think about inflation differently, she says. She's been inundated with calls recently from central bankers, parliamentarians, think tanks, academics, and, of course, reporters. We live in interesting times. Now, legend in his own mind, Elon Musk is calling out the laptop class of workers for their privilege of being able to work from home. As a growing number of companies, including himself, call staff back to the office. As CEO of two highly visible companies, Musk's views undoubtedly influence other business leaders. When Musk, who has sharply reduced Twitter's headcount, was asked during a recent interview whether other tech CEOs have thanked him for the runway to make deep cuts of their own, he replied that he's heard from a few people. In the interview, Musk expanded on his previous argument about remote work and compared it to a class divide. He noted how messed up it is that people who build cars and make food have to go to work, but that those in the laptop class don't. They can't work from home, but you can. Does that seem morally right? He asked. Well, Musk issued an ultimatum last year, it was reported, to Tesla staff to get back to the office or face termination. He said, anyone who wishes to do remote work must be in the office for a minimum, and I mean minimum, of 40 hours a week or depart Tesla. This is less than we ask of factory workers. According to data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, businesses where 90% or more of employees rarely or never work remotely include hotels, restaurants, bars, and mining. 80% or more include construction, retail, trade, and transportation. And 70 to 80% is warehousing, healthcare, entertainment, manufacturing, and utilities. The kind of flexible, fragmented work style that emerged during the pandemic will likely be here to stay in some way, shape, or form, especially given how many happy workers there are now with the work-life balance they've gained. At the same time, the jobs that are still the hardest to fill are the ones that Musk is referring to. Those with the least flexibility and greatest in-person challenges. Control over our work environments, an unspoken benefit to those who actively choose to work from home, as is the ability to choose and control how much you want to interact with people, whether online or in person. As to Musk's pronouncements, I guess the one thing we can agree on is that the availability of choice is in and of itself a privilege, to be sure. Now, there's an underreported side effect to the flexibility of remote and hybrid work. Daytime drug and drinking habits are rising. Working from home means that for many workers, drinking and indulging in recreational drugs are no longer after-hours activities. A stunning 27 million working-age Americans between 25 and 54, the prime years, have substance abuse orders, according to a recent study by the Atlanta Fed. It's a 23% jump compared with pre-pandemic days. As Melody and I have reported previously, that's caused many to drop out of the labor force altogether. Hybrid work can accelerate the downward spiral of, shortening the decline from 10 years to a matter of months. That's Daniel Angris, medical director at Chicago's Positive Sobriety Institute. Well, that's because, he says, isolation takes away a key barrier to substance abuse, spending lots of time around healthy people. Substance abuse is also triggered by real-time work stress, addiction specialists say. This problem is likely to persist in any event as companies continue to allow their employees to work from home. Mm-mm-mm. Interesting effect. Let's end today's program with a deeper dive on mental health. We're reading more and more that loneliness in America is widespread, and it's a growing public health problem, to be sure. More than one in three Americans are lonely, per a recent Harvard study. That rises to 61% when looking at younger people and 51% among mothers with young kids. It's not just a feeling. Loneliness has real consequences for your health and can shorten your life. One analysis likens the negative health effects of loneliness to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. The pandemic spotlighted and worsened loneliness in America. It hit older adults who had to isolate themselves to protect their kids, kids who stayed home from school, and young professionals who moved back to live with parents. But even the most connected people with seemingly robust social lives and networks can be quite lonely. It's more about the quality of our relationships, the experts say. Research has linked loneliness to mental health conditions like depression and dementia, and physical ailments like high blood pressure, obesity, diabetes. John Leland writes, "The human brain, having evolved to seek safety in numbers, registers loneliness as a threat in many people." Loneliness, they say, is a macro problem, but it's got some micro solutions, and we can all play a part in alleviating the loneliness around us. One of the most effective interventions for loneliness, in fact, goes back to the basics. Pick up the stinking telephone. But, I mean, just calling isn't enough. Manander Callan, a professor at the University of Texas's Dell Medical School, who studies loneliness and examined the effects of phone calls in a recent study, said, "Don't talk when you call. Ask questions. Let them talk. People feel good and connected when what they have to offer is seen as valuable and interesting." And he adds, "And don't worry if someone doesn't talk that much. Even the fact that they picked up the phone is a sign they're seeking connection." The bottom line, well, if you haven't heard from a family member or a friend in a while, you dial them up, pick up the phone, and listen. Who knows? You might brighten their day, week, or even month. More importantly, you might even save a life. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody back tomorrow with Butch to close out the week. Also, be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the AM. Thanks, as always, to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening wherever you are. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my